Do you want every word of baseball analysis from Big Guy Fantasy Sports sent directly to your inbox each and every day? In that case, head on over to BigGuyFantasySports.com, find the box that says BGFS Daily Fantasy Blast, type in your name and email address, then click subscribe. It's that simple. Don't fall behind your competition on waiver wire trends, prospect scouting reports, streaming options, or even DFS picks to click. Subscribe to the BigGuyFantasySports.com newsletter today.
Hey, this is Robin Vandenberg, and I'm here to tell you that WBLZ Sports is so proud to bring every sports fan the hottest shows out there. Whether it's NFL, baseball, racing, soccer, golfing, even fishing, WBLZ Sports has you covered. You can even download our app on Google Play or check us out on WBLZSports.com. What makes us a step ahead of the others? It's called balls, baby.
You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello and welcome to episode 119 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Dots Pretzels. I'm Nathan Dokken. You can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dokken. And I am joined on this week not by Nate Miller. He's out doing a dodgeball tournament, a naked dodgeball tournament, I believe is what it was. Everything is more dangerous when you're naked, and he lives on the edge, that's for sure. So joining me this week is, as usual, Van Lee. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here. And I'd just like to announce to all of our listeners that I am, in fact, DTF. Which means down to fantasy.
Ah, okay. See, we've in the past, as far as like the real insider slang, we use DTP as in down to pod.
So, oh, like, okay.
Back when it was the old crew, like me and Joe and Jesse, we would, before we had a real set night, we would kind of play it by ear half the time. We just throw a group text out there and say, "You guys DTP on Tuesday or whatever."
This is good. I'm going to have to use this. Put that in my vernacular.
Yeah, DTP. Yeah, you know me. And speaking of DTP and perhaps DTF, filling in for Nate Miller this week, back from a several-week hiatus is Ron Rigney. Welcome back to the NastyCast.
What's up, guys? Glad to be here. Hey, does that mean that Nate Miller is DTNB down to naked dodgeball?
I think so.
Okay.
That's a dangerous game. I mean,
I also want to know, is that a common thing like in Georgia? Is that a big Georgia thing, naked dodgeball?
It must be. Yeah. And, a lot of sports and games are far more dangerous naked, but I think dodgeball would really be like extremely more dangerous naked.
Mm, yeah. When balls collide, it's never good. wanted to shout out the great Ron Rigney here joining the Fantastics crew along with me. Congratulations on that front, my good friend.
Thank you, thank you. Glad to be over there. A great site, been around for a long time. Some guys that are extremely well respected in the industry. So honored to be the newest member of the crew.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring the place down, but I have yet to succeed. I've been working myself.
I'll give it my best effort. I'll try to. I got you backed up there. So
I think between the two of us, we can bring that whole website down.
I think we could. We can crash that thing, no problem.
Yeah. Just keep plugging away, guys. You'll get there. Reach for the stars.
Chopping wood.
All about determination. So on today's show, we have call-ups. Yay. Lots of good stuff to talk about, and less injury talk than usual because this season has been rather depressing on the injury front. Legit or quit, of course. And we're going to talk about the bullpens. Colby Conway, of course, if you go to BigGuyFantasySports.com, he does the bullpen report every week. And we're also going to talk some prospects. And Ron Rigney, he does that every week for Big Guy Fantasy Sports. And he is here with us to talk about it a little bit later on in the show this week. And, of course, we're going to round out the show with some streamers. Hip hop hooray. But I want to let me just switch gears real quick here. I gotta finish this housekeeping before. I was so excited to get to this topic. Twitter. You want to follow us on Twitter at NastyCastBGFS. You can tweet us all your little happy questions, whatever is coming to mind. you know, tacos versus fajitas, naked dodgeball, or naked horseback riding. Which do you prefer? At Nathan Dawkins as well, I said myself, at Manly Van Lee is Van, and at The Real Maday, M-A-D-A-Y, is Ron. There we go. I got it all out of the way. And then also, rate and review the podcast if you like the show. And obviously, we will give you some free Dots pretzels if you give us 5 stars. And make us
and
happy.
Dots pretzels, they're not making me thirsty.
No. We were talking Seinfeld before the show started. Yes. Way to tie that in. Well done.
Excellent.
So just as like we've never done this before, and we might never do this again, but I just had a topic that I wanted to start the show with you guys because it's been going on in a number of my leagues, and I just called this opening pitch. I don't know why, because it's generic and it makes sense because it's the first thing we're going to talk about. But in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, we had a big conversation about this, and then now another one of my leagues as well, which is the Dynasty League. Obviously, the 10-day DL has impacted our game to a pretty big extent so far this year, and so we've been discussing expanding the number of DL slots because you know everybody's hitting the freaking DL. So should leagues expand the number of DL slots because of this new 10-day DL? I'm just going to throw that out there. What do you guys think about this whole all these shenanigans that are going on this year?
Absolutely. I mean, I see zero reasons why we shouldn't increase the DL spots. And I think we had some pushback in the Dynasty Baseball League of, I think Casey's big argument was that people would just start picking people up and then they would just have nobody on the wire and it would just be full benches and blah, blah, blah. I don't even care about that. Listen, you've got drafts, you've got big teams. That's where you're going to get your players. If you have people on the wire, they're on the wire for a reason. There's not going to be that many people out there that are really worth picking up. So I'm all about adding the additional DL slots. I think it's just absurd that you should be punished for someone who's hurt on your team. And that's normally not something you could predict.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Ron, on the topic?
Well, I agree. I mean, when you spend as much time as people do researching leagues and trying to come up with some sort of a game plan and guys you want to target, you know, it like Van said, it's hard to get penalized for guys getting hurt. That's not anything you can control. I look at a couple of the leagues I'm in. I have a buddy that I play in an ESPN league with, and he has, I think we have a 25-man roster, and of the 25 or 30 guys he drafted at the beginning of the year, he's got 11 of them on the DL.
Wow.
The problem is we only have a 3-man bench and a 3-man DL. So then it becomes, do you just kind of try to ride out the storm and maybe go shorthanded a little bit because there's guys that you don't want to drop? Or do you drop those guys and just try to make the best of it and make moves later on? So I think it depends on how many you already have. I mean, I have a couple of leagues that have 5 DL spots. I think that that's pretty good. But, you know, you just wonder if with the 10-day DL now, are more teams going to use this as kind of a rest mechanism? You know, we'll say, oh, he's got a hamstring pull or he's got, you know, something minor, but does he really have that? Or are we just going to sit the guy for 10 days and, you know, maybe he misses a start or two and then he can pick back up in the rotation. So it's hard to say, but I think that it's a beneficial thing because you can't control that. And, you know, it almost kind of throws away everything you did in the preseason trying to put a solid team together.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that MLB teams are taking advantage of this 10-day DL to a certain extent. Like you said, just if somebody is you know, has a little twinge of any muscle, just throw him on the DL, he'll miss a start, he'll probably be good to come back, and as long as they can do that, I don't see why we shouldn't be able to do that in the fantasy game as well. We always try to mirror real life, you know, to a certain extent as well as we can. You know, and there's, as far as the backlash against it, you know, like you said with the, you know, just stashing of guys, I really don't see a huge advantage in doing that anyway, just because when you're stashing a guy, you're not getting anything from him. Nobody's getting anything from him. He's injured. And if he's on the waiver wire anyway, he's probably not that good. Like, what is it, a potential closer maybe that's going to be coming back? I mean, if Miguel Cabrera goes on the DL, nobody's going to be dropping him, you know. So I just don't think that you know, balances out in the other direction as far as making it not worthwhile to add DL slots.
Well, and if you would happen to strike it rich with a guy too that you're picking up, if you put a guy on the DL, when that guy that's on the DL comes back, you're going to have to drop whoever you got off waivers anyway. So are you going to be able to keep him or not?
Yeah. Yeah, so we've it's tough to sort of reacting mid-season like this. I know in the Dynasty we ended up, there were several people that objected to switching it mid-season, which is understandable. You never really want to change.
Yeah,
you never want to change rules mid-season. So next year is when it's going to take effect, and everybody that's been bit hard by the injury bug is just going to kind of have to suck it up. And we already had 5 DL slots, so it's not like it's the end of the world. We have 7 bench slots as well. And some of the guys in the league are using all 7 bench slots for minor leaguers anyway, since it's a dynasty league. So, like, they don't care.
No present company included in that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few. I mean, come on.
Well, it's one thing to have a few, but because we can only keep 20.
Right.
As far as major leaguers from year over year. So some of the guys end up throwing a lot of those players back, you know, and they're like 18 years old. So really, it's a weird strategy. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's move into some news. And we're going to start off with some happy news. And that is JD Martinez returning from the DL, not going on it. He's finally back. And I want to start off with a dude feud here, you boys.
Ooh.
I'm the dude, so that's what you call me, you know? That or his dudeness or duder or, El Duderino.
Yes, so Martinez has come back. He immediately had a ridiculous game. He hit 2 home runs and walked 4 times in one game. And that's if I read right, I believe that hasn't been done since 1920 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, so... Monster game, and he's got like a 2,000 plus OPS in his 4 games back. Talk about coming back with a bang. So I'll just throw out some names out there. Rest of the season, it is worth stating, I think, that Martinez supposedly is going to be playing through some pain in his foot for the rest of the season. He's going to be out there, but he's going to be kind of trying to manage the pain as the season wears on. But let's start with the breakout player of the year, Aaron Judge. Who are we going with the rest of the way? Aaron Judge, right now, according to Yahoo, is the number 7 overall hitter. Of course, you got Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Eric Thames in front of him. So who are we going with, Aaron Judge or JD Martinez for the rest of the way? Either one of you.
I'll go first. I'm going Martinez all the way. Judge has not quite proven himself worthy of it yet. Yes, everything has been prestigious, but it's still a small sample size. We're maybe 100 bats, 110 bats at bats, something like that. Whereas Martinez is a guy that I know is going to hit 280 to 300. He doesn't walk quite as much as guys in I would like him to, but he still walks enough. And plus, with the batting average that high, you don't have to walk too much to have a good OBP. And I mean, clearly the guy can hit home runs too. So I think I'm going the safer bet. I think if I were going to argue for Judge, I would say that Martinez is a bit of an injury risk right now. And again, like you said, along with playing through the pain, though I'm not really too worried about that. I mean, he already has 4 home runs this season and he's played a couple of games. Yeah. So I'm all for JD Martinez at this point.
All right. What about you, Ron?
Yeah, I'm going to go Martinez too. And I think you have to think something like that with the foot injury. They're going to manage it pretty well. And, you know, who knows? We talked about the 10-day DL earlier. Maybe they'll use that a couple times. I don't know, but the sample size is bigger, like Van said, and Judge hits bombs and he's going to hit bombs, but you're going to get more batting average. You're going to get, you know, a little bit more out of the other categories from Martinez. The only thing that concerns me other than his injury though, is the rest of that lineup needs to pick it up. I mean, you have Upton and Cabrera both hitting 248, Kinsler hitting 233. Nick Castellanos, who we'll talk about later on, has been a train wreck at 227. So it scares me a little bit that, you know, if those guys don't pick it up, which it's hard to think that they're all going to hit that low for this, you know, the whole season. But if they don't start to pick it up, is Martinez going to get anything to hit? The only other guy in the lineup that's really that's performing up to their, you know, their expectation is V-Mart, who's hitting around 277. So they need to pick it up for Martinez to get some pitches to hit. But I mean, on fire is kind of an understatement for what he's done since he's come back. But I got to go Martinez as well, just because, you know exactly what you're going to get with him.
Man, well, that I guess I'll be the lone dissenter then. I just think that I think between the two of them, I'll go with Aaron Judge just because of the injury kind of gives me pause with JD Martinez. And that's one knock on him in the past is that he's been a guy who tends to get dinged up, and he's not exactly the best outfielder ever. So he does tend to run into walls and injure himself and so on and so forth. So that does give me pause. And Judge, everything he's done so far seems pretty legitimate. his power might slow down and his walk rate might tick up as teams refuse to pitch to him, which would make sense. Either way, I think if you're, you know, either of these guys, it's a pretty solid way to go for the rest of the season. And man, I started really high with that. With that one, I mean, there's only three guys in front of him, so there's not. I'm trying to figure out where else to go with this one. I mean, Charlie Blackmon.
That's going to depend on team construction to me, because obviously Blackman's going to be a steals guy, though he does have some power. I like both of them, to be honest.
9 home runs and 2 steals for Corey Blackmon, by the way.
Is it really? Yeah. Corey Blackmon, huh?
Charlie Blackmon, what did I say?
Well, that was not very extreme of you to say that. He's going to ride over on a skateboard and give you a piece of his mind before long.
Corey Feldman. I mean,
there you go.
He's looking up for the rest of the season. Man, so what do you guys, top 10 outfielder the rest of the way?
You know, when you posited the question in our synopsis here, you said top blank outfielder. I think he can be a top 15 outfielder, but I'm more comfortable putting him in the 20 to 25 range just because of the questions. But if he ends up at the end of the season in the top 15, I'm fine with that, because that's not going to surprise me. We'll say that.
You agree, Ron?
I'd say 15 to 20, all things considered. I think I read a couple of places in the preseason that had him anywhere from, I think one place had him 12, one place had him 14. So I wouldn't be shocked if he's in that 15 to 20 range.
Oh, so you guys are both just kind of down on Judge then. I guess I started off with a bad name.
Down on Judge is not the right word. I guess I'll call myself old school in this regard. I think there are too many people who jump the prospect bandwagon too quickly. And I mean, there's even some guys on this list we'll talk about later that kind of fall into that category. But it's this idea that ever since Harper and Trout came up, every single prospect is going to hit amazingly. And I just don't agree with it. I think some of these guys take a little longer to get into it. And yeah, we're seeing what Judge can do. But with a big adjustment period here, is he going to go back to doing what he did last year, which was never even touching the ball? Is there going to be just a slight drop off, or is he going to get better? So I'm kind of in the park of, I don't fully believe what I see yet. I need a larger sample size.
Old school Van. That's what they call you. Well, speaking of prospects coming up, we're going to get into a couple of those guys right now. Ian Happ, first and foremost, helping out the Cubs so far. But he's going to be a bit of a playing time crunch when Jason Hayward comes back. He was initially called up just supposedly for a game or two, since half the Cubs were sick, and he's just been hitting like gamebusters out of the gate so far. 13 plate appearances, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts, and he's slashing .400, .538, .1100. So that's pretty good. 2 home runs, 3 runs, 4 RBI. So what do we think about Ian Happ? I guess we'll start with you, Ron, on this one. Ian Happ, is he going to stick around, and is he worth picking up in leagues if he does?
It's hard to say if he's worth picking up. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to think that they're not going to have Jason Hayward out there with the money that he makes. But like I say, it's hard to send him down as well. My theory is it could be a possible showcase to maybe move him somewhere. You know, they have quite a few riches. You know, in Chicago, they got a taste of the championship last season. And I think that, you know, we kind of see what the after effect is of that. Everybody, the fans, everybody loves it. I read a couple of interesting reports this week about they are kicking the tires a little bit on Zach Greinke, which I thought was kind of interesting. So maybe there's a connection there where they might move Happ, or they might move somebody to clear up some time for Happ to bring in a pitcher, because Arrieta hasn't really been Arrieta of the last couple seasons, and so they could use a little help there. But I think that you'll see him make a move to get a little bit better in the rotation, and Greinke could possibly be that guy if Arizona is looking to move him.
What's your assessment of the situation, Ben?
I agree with that. I think ultimately, like, if you're in a league and he's available out there and you have a spot for him, pick him up, but don't expect a whole lot. I mean, he's a good player, obviously. I think the report on him was that he could be a 2020 guy eventually. But the Cubs are stacked. I mean, they're a really good team. Hayward's making a ton of money. Even if Happ is unbelievably good and continues doing what he's doing, it's not as prudent to them as it would be to, say, the Giants or a team like that. So I still think they just get a little seasoning, send him down. Excuse me, just because their roster's good enough as it is. I really like the idea of a Greinke trade. I think that could be a good one for them, though, you know, obviously I'm not quite keen on moving a ton of people for 38-year-old pitchers who make a ton of money, but I think that could be an interesting possibility. So we'll see, but I don't think he's going to be on the team long-term this year anyway.
Yeah, it certainly does make sense to use him as trade bait and get some pitching. Yeah, that Greinke thing, that would be interesting, although, I mean, it's not like the Diamondbacks have been that terrible. You would think that they, especially the way he's been pitching, you'd think they'd want to hang on to him with a humidor coming, supposedly, allegedly. We'll see if that ever comes to fruition. But yeah, talk about an embarrassment of riches. Ian Happ he's more than a utility man, so he deserves to be in a full-time role somewhere. I don't necessarily know if they want to wait until Ben Zobrist's contract is up, you know, because he's already kind of the a lot of people have been comparing those two directly, being on the same team and all, but Zobrist definitely getting a little long in the tooth. So we'll see. It's definitely going to be hard to hang on to him. It's going to be hard for the Cubs to keep him up when Hayward returns. And so I would be hanging on very tenuously. I wouldn't be, you know, if I had to drop him for somebody else because I had an injury elsewhere, I wouldn't hesitate to do that. I guess I'll put it that way.
Sure.
Another call-up, Bradley Zimmer called up by the Indians. Old honest Abe Almonte is going to be on the DL for 3 to 5 weeks due to a bicep strain. So, Van, we'll start with you. What are your expectations of Bradley Zimmer?
I like Zimmer a lot. I think he's a really good prospect. He's, of course, has a little more speed than power, but he does get on base, and I think he should be owned in pretty much every league. I think the opposite of the Cubs' problem here is you've got the Indians who, you know, maybe their outfield isn't quite as good as it could be. Tyler Napkin or whatever is showing that last year was a bit of a flash in the pan moment.
I wish he was a good defender so you could be like, oh, he's wiping up all the batted balls in the outfield out there or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, that'd be great. Michael
super,
Brantley.
Super absorbent out there.
Ooh, that's good. I like that.
Tyler Michael super Brantley.
Michael Brantley is injury risk. Of course, I think he's on the DL now, but he's been really good. So I think, anyway, short answer is they have a little more of a spot for him. And if he starts hitting well, I think he stays with the team long term and he's up for the rest of the season.
Ron, what do you say?
Yeah, I mean, if he's going to have 3 to 5 weeks to show what he's able to do, I think that he sticks around. You know, he's a guy with 20-20 potential. But when you look at, because I was looking up what his grades, you know, how he grades out as far as scouts, and his highest grade is his defense. And I think a lot of these prospects, I think what can really help them out is the fact that they can play good defense in addition to kind of learning, you know, the ins and outs of the major league game at the plate, you know, being a little more patient, taking pitches. And unlike Ian Happ, like Van said, he's got a pretty clear path to playing time, considering who they have already in the outfield. He's not going to be sitting a whole lot. I think Zimmer hit a bomb today. So I think he's making the most of it so far, but yeah, I think he's going to be up to stay. And the other thing too, is it seemed like he had been a prospect for a long time, but he really hasn't been in the minors that long. But I think that he's got way more potential to see the field every day than Ian Happ does.
Yeah, I totally agree. The playing time situation is there. As long as he hits, I think he's up. 24 years old, so his time is now. A lot of people were stashing him from the onset of the season, and he ended up going for, I believe, $30 out of a $100 budget in the Fart League, the slightly less prestigious Fart League, the local league that I started here. And yeah, a lot of strikeout issues, very high strikeout rates throughout the minors. So if there is any problem, you know, that is in his profile that could hinder him, could see him strike out 30%+ of the time, and if that gets to be a problem that he can't corral, then you might see him get sent back down. But he definitely needs to be picked up in all leagues with his power speed combo that he had just last year. 38 stolen bases last year between double and triple A, and 15 home runs. So might be a low batting average, probably be one of those guys who's going to be better in OBP leagues as well. So give him a little bit of a fab boost there if you do your weekly pickups. And so let's move on to my dude, Jose Barrios, Burrito Suave, as we like to call him here on the Nasty Cast. Finally called up by the Twins. Enough Nick Tepish for 1 year, in my opinion. So, Ron, what do you think about Barrios moving forward? Obviously, he can't be as bad as last year.
No, and a couple of things I read this week about, you know, what caused his woes last year, and a lot of people attribute it to teams were able to find him tipping pitches and able to pick up on what he was going to do before he did it. And so I was looking him up a little bit today, and when you look at what teams did against him last year in the small sample that he got in the bigs, they hit .307 against him last year, .344 BABIP. So, I mean, they definitely had something to key on that they knew what was happening. And when you fast forward to this year, teams are hitting .167 against him in AAA, and he really doesn't have anything left to prove at the AAA level. I mean, you look at his numbers from last year in AAA and the year before in the minors, he kind of mastered, you know, those levels. So I think they have to bring him up. I don't think that Minnesota can realistically look and think that they're going to go anywhere this year. So why not leave him up and see what he can do? They've been able to do that with Buxton, and so far, and overall, the sample size hasn't, or the results haven't been like what they had wanted, but at least he's getting that work there at the big league level instead of bringing him back and forth. And I always think that was pretty detrimental to Buxton to do that to him. And I think if they just look at that and they leave Berrios up, I think he'll be fine. So far so good in the one start. He looked extremely dominant. And I think that there's going to be more of that to come. I think that's more of what he is rather than the .307 average against that they hit against him last year in the bigs.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on it, man?
I agree. I think a key component here to his success is, do the Twins ruin him again? Because last year they pitched him inconsistently. I think there was even a bullpen game. I can't remember. It was absurd what they did with him. They would skip a start. They would rest him. Stop it. Put him in the rotation. Have him pitch every 5 days, and you'll be great. He's a really good prospect. He has the potential to be an ace, but they need to stay out of it. They did the same thing with Buxton. We're getting a trend here of prospects and the Twins just kind of messing with them, and that's why they're not really panning out. But we can also see, like, Miguel Sano, he's succeeding. So when you put the guy in and let them do what they need to do, they can succeed. So I'm all in on Berrios, and if he's for some reason out there, try and get him, because I think he stays up the rest of the year and maybe he doesn't throw, you know, 190 innings the rest of the season, but I think whatever you get from him is going to be good.
Yeah, hopefully everybody out there stashed him. I actually talked about him several weeks ago on this show and was talking about how he was tipping his changeup. He was holding it a little bit differently, and they seem to have corrected that, and, you know, they allegedly were trying to keep him down to work on his fastball command, basically pound the strike zone a little bit more, which is definitely his problem. You saw when he went from AAA to, you know, he's like a Cy Young pitcher in AAA, and then he'd come up to the majors and he posted like a 9 ERA, just getting crushed. And it's because, not only for the pitch tipping, but he just, he wouldn't get the swings and misses out of the zone with the major league, players that he would in AAA. They're a lot more disciplined in the majors. They're going to lay off all that stuff, the tailing fastballs that go out of the zone. And, you know, he failed to get ahead of hitters quite a bit as well. And that's really going to be the key for him going forward, is just getting that first strike and getting ahead in the count so that he can use his breaking stuff and his off-speed stuff, his changeup and everything. So we'll see how that goes. I think that he could, in the long term, I think you could see a couple seasons of like a number two type of numbers from him. Still just 22, just about 23 years old. So still very young, still a lot of future ahead of him. And, like I said, he's just got to keep pounding the strike zone. And I would expect maybe number three, number four numbers this year. Maybe the strikeouts tend to tick up as he improves his sequencing later on in the season, maybe even next year. But he definitely is a guy that needs to be owned in all leagues, in my opinion, just because of the upside. Obviously, you'll get some ups and downs, and hopefully he learns how to pitch a little bit deeper into games as opposed to years past. But so far, so good as far as this season. He's been able to pitch pretty deep into games in all of his starts. So very, very encouraging. I'm excited for him moving forward. But let's play a little game called Legit or Quit. And we're going to start off with Gregory Polanco, who unfortunately just hit the disabled list today. So this kind of goes from are we buying low on him to are we buying super low on him because he's hurt? So it changes the equation a little bit. So far this year, hitting just .252, .336, .370. Just one home run, although six stolen bases so far. So, Van, we shall start with you here. What is your take on Gregory Polanco moving forward?
Old Greg, he's 25. he's young.
He does watercolors.
Exactly. Come on into my basement. But anyway, if anybody remembers that. Anyway, he's 25. He's young. He has played plenty of growing pains, but I'm all in. I really, really like him. The question for me is not, well, I guess we could say it this way. I still think he succeeds. If he doesn't, I think he's going to bomb miserably. I think we're going to see his line this year be the rest of his line for career. I think when he succeeds is the big question. And with, I think it was a hamstring issue, but it's a very, very minor thing. I think this is more, he's a little hurt. Let's clear your head and get started back. So I still think he succeeds this year as well. So I'm all in. I'm buying low if I can. And in fact, I'm going to try and target him in the Dynasty League just to see what, if I can swing a deal for him there.
Oh, interesting. Ron, are you...
I don't know who owns him.
I want to say Shelley. We'll see.
Oh, great. Well, I'm not trading for him then.
Ron, what do you think about Polanco moving forward?
I'm the same way. I'm going to try to acquire him as many places as I can, you know, because the upside's too big. And, he, and like Van said, he is still just 25. And when you look at it, what he did last year with 22 homers, 17 steals, 86 RBI. That's a pretty solid season out of an outfielder. I would like to see his OBP and his average go up a little bit to help you in those categories. But if he can be what he was last year, if he can kind of make that the baseline as far as the homers, RBI, and steals, you know, 20, 20, 80, 90 RBIs is nothing to sneeze at. So I'm going to try to get him everywhere I can. I think the upside's great, and I think he's going to be fine.
Yeah, the upside definitely is there. I'm afraid though. There's I think that there's got to be an injury in here somewhere. Even in addition to the hamstring, I wouldn't be surprised if there's like a shoulder injury or something like that, because he just looks completely different in his batted ball profile from last year. His hard contact rate is down to 23% from 36% last year, just way, way down. His fly ball rate, after climbing steadily for 3 years in a row, up to 37% last year, down to just 26% this year. He's hitting way more balls on the ground. And it's very not encouraging at all. I don't know why, like, you would regress like that, unless there's something really strange that he's doing in his swing, which I haven't heard anything about. It just seems like there's no reason for him to be losing so much loft on the ball. And, you know, his strikeout rate is way down so far this year. Yeah, 13% down from 20%. But so you would think that that's encouraging, but I don't even know if that's going to sustain, because if you look at his swing and strike rate, it's actually up from last year. His contact rate is down slightly. He's reaching at more balls out of the zone, as if he's pressing a little bit. And why wouldn't you when you're off to this slow start? So I'm really worried. I'm afraid that this might just end up being a lost year for him. I know it's early to say that, but you know, hopefully this stay on the DL rates the ship. But like I said, there's just a lot of stuff that is scaring me off right now. So I don't think I'm actually sending out any low ball offers on Polanco as far as single season leagues. Dynasty leagues, like you said, Van, I mean, then I'm all for it, you know, if you don't have anything to lose this year. But yeah, I'm definitely frightened of the Polanco. And on, let's see, on sort of the same page, we have another disappointment, Nick Castellanos. Hitting just 227, 295, 393 so far this year. Three home runs, one steal. Ron, we shall start with you here. What do you think about Castellanos moving forward? Is he going to right the ship?
Castellanos no es bueno. No, I'm off. I'm off board, quit, whatever you want to say. I've dumped him in just about every place I have him. I was digging a little bit today, and I looked at his K percentage is 27.7. And I've been kind of toying around with the weighted runs created plus a lot lately, and I like looking at that as kind of an indicator. And he's at 86, which the average is 100, so he's well below that. He's not doing enough to create runs. He's not doing enough beyond getting singles and producing, let alone from him hit. We kind of touched on earlier with when we were talking about the Tigers lineup. He's hitting 227, 295 OBP. And the lineup around him struggling too. So if you got a guy that's hitting this way, he's not going to get they're going to challenge him. And if he's getting challenged and he's putting up these numbers, he's a guy that I'm not wanting anything to do with. And he was one of my guys. You know, when we did our divisional previews, Nate and John and I were talking about this division, and we discussed him quite a bit. And he was a guy that I liked going in. And early on, it looked like he was going to pan out. And he could still write the any of these guys, you know, they're talented enough to get to the bigs, they can still write the ship. But as of right now, I've dumped him on the waiver wire. I think actually in one league I was able to add Jose Berrios for dropping Nick Castellanos. So that I think that kind of panned out as a decent move. But I'm completely off the bandwagon.
All right, Van, the Castellanos, what say you?
I'm not quite ready to jump off, but here's why. Like, let's look at Polanco. Polanco, I thought, could be a superstar. Castellanos, I thought, could be a really good player. So, I mean, we're dealing with a different level of player here. And looking at his numbers, the walk percentage is up. That's the most important thing that I'm actually going to take away from this, is he's walking a lot more. The strikeout percentage is up. I think that could go down. The BABIP is 30 points below his career average. So if you add 30 points to his triple slash, he'd be 260, 330, 420, which looks fine. It doesn't look great, but it looks fine. So I still think there's some potential here. And because he's walking a little more, which is something he didn't really do, there's a little more positivity to look at in this regard. So I still think he's okay. But if you've got him in your lineup, you should probably have a handcuff. Have somebody else that maybe it's a hot start that you can plug in there and sit Castellanos or Llanos. I don't know how it's pronounced, to be honest.
I don't think he knows either.
So, or Nicholas if you're playing Fantrax, because they've added his full name there. Right, but anyway, yeah. I still kind of like him, though expectations are tempered a bit with me.
Yeah, I think it's I guess I'll say that I am, out of the three of us, I'm definitely the most optimistic on him. I think in a deeper league, I would buy low, you know, where this is a guy that could be used as a corner infield. So we're talking like 15-team leagues. 12-team leagues, he might be on the waiver wire, to be perfectly honest, after this start. But his hard contact is 51% hard contact rate so far. It's just ludicrous. And the fact that he's not just hitting fly balls all the time, and he is still, well, his BABIP is 304, I guess. So, you know, 28% strikeout rate, that'll keep your batting average pretty low. But the fact that more of those balls, I mean, with a hard contact rate like that, you could expect a BABIP closer to what the 345 that he had last year, you know, a 330 BABIP. With a 51% hard contact rate, is definitely not out of the question. So I think there's a lot of upward movement here. Unfortunately, he's hitting fewer fly balls this year, substantially fewer fly balls, 9% drop in fly ball rate this year. So that's obviously going to leave you with a lower home run per fly ball rate when you're just going to, you know, not hitting so many balls in the air. And he's not a huge pull hitter either. So I think that he needs to start trying to get that loft back in his swing and hit some more out of the park. It's nice that he's, you know, like you said, Ron, that the lineup is definitely down this year. But you know, he's still hitting number two so far. We'll see. I kind of thought that they might drop him once J.D. Martinez returned. That hasn't happened. So we'll see. But I'm buying him. Despite the high strikeout rate, I think I'm going to throw out a low ball offer on him. I think it's only a matter of time before the batting average creeps back up. Even though the strikeouts are too much, but he's making too good of contact right now for him to be this bad for the rest of the season. So let's move on to Jonathan Lucroy, who has struggled out of the gate. Yeah, I put this one on here for you, Van, because we had a little back and forth in the preseason, and then again recently on Twitter about the Lucroy. 272, 318, 379 so far this year with just two home runs. So, Van, we'll kick this off with you here. What do you think about Lucroy the rest of the season?
First and foremost, Lucroy is a good player, so I still think he's going to succeed and be pretty good. My big caveat or point, I guess I would say about this, was that some people were taking Lucroy over Posey, and I still say that's just absolutely absurd. Posey's a year younger. His workload has been monitored far better because the Giants play him at first base occasionally, and he's been a lot healthier, so I think that's crazy. And the two lines, obviously it's a short sample, kind of prove my point here. Posey's hitting otherworldly numbers, and Lucroy's been pretty I won't even say mediocre, because he really hasn't killed you. The average is still okay. The OBP has been down, but not terrible for a catcher. It's the slugging percentage that's killing you here. He's slugging 380 with only two homers. So does he right the ship? Absolutely. I think he's still going to be good, but I guess I'm just not as high on Lucroy as a lot of people.
Are you higher on him than Van, Ron?
I think so. I look at catcher such a weak position anyway, and he's one of the better guys there. Now, I agree with Van as far as people taking him above Posey. No way that I would ever done that. But when you look at what he's done recently, you know, we touched on the 272 batting average. He's raised that 40 points in the last 10 games. I mean, he's hit the ball very well. But when you look over that same span, he's only driven in three. He's only hit one homer. So, you want to see a little bit more in the way of as far as driving in runs and hitting him out of the ballpark. But, you know, if you've got a guy at your catcher position that's hitting you 270 and going to hit you a legit 270 for the majority of the season, you know, that's something that you're looking at a weak spot. I would take that all day long. So, yeah, I'm pretty high on Luke Roy. He's a guy that I didn't get in a lot of places, and you get to that point where they're hitting around 230. You give a catcher a little bit longer leash too, I think, than you do other positions as far as just, you know, who you have there and the scarcity of it, because you're not going to pick anything up likely off of waivers that's going to hit above 200 anyway. So you're going to keep him in there. But I think he's going to be fine the rest of the way. I think he's a good hitter. He's a good player, and I think he'll kind of even out. And I think a little bit more power will come as the season goes, but I'm good with having him as my catcher if I can get him.
I want to interject here real quick because you still see a lot of this where people come up and talk about how great of a park Texas is to hit in. And to be honest, it's not compared to what it used to be for sure. I was looking at park factors, and they're actually ranked in the bottom third of the majors as far as one of the better parks to hit in. So I think that argument kind of needs to be taken a little bit away. They still have that jet stream if you hit it up to right center field, but for the most part, that park is not a Milwaukee Stadium, Miller Park, or anything like that. It just doesn't play like it used to as far as a big, you know, bandbox.
Yeah, I mean, one spot where LaCroix has really killed you so far is runs and RBI. 7 home runs and 8 RBI so far as of this moment. I mean, that's terrible. But, yeah, there's just so much weirdness so far. There's got to, again, with Polanco, I just think, I haven't really heard any scuttlebutt about injury with him. I don't know about you guys, but, I only own him in one league in a dynasty points league, which is the best place to own him, really, is a points league because of the play discipline. And he's not a huge power guy. You know, the 24 home runs last year, definitely did not see that coming. He was actually on my don'ts list last year because he doesn't hit for power. 7 home runs, you know, the year before that, despite it, you know, it was a shortened season for him due to injury. But 24 home runs was way over his head, just like Buster Posey so far this year is trending way above his head in the power department. 7 home runs already for him. But yeah, I definitely, you know, coming into the year between the two guys, I can't even remember, Van. Like, did I say Luke Roy over Posey?
No, I don't think you did. I think you still kept Posey, but you were saying it wouldn't be absurd to have Luke Roy over. I think it is absurd. I think that's just crazy. Posey's the catcher, in my opinion.
Yeah, I should pull up my rankings here. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think it was, crazy just based on, like, the players were trending. Like I said, I definitely expect the power to repeat from Luke Roy for 21 home runs. But I also, you know, looking at Buster Posey, not that much better in the home run department. He's been trending downward for the last 3 years coming into this year. Already he's got 7, just 14 last year, although he dealt with injuries too, like catchers often do. But it's just way more ground balls so far this year from Luke Roy. It's only been 110 plate appearances, so you don't really want to take too much from it. But, man, like, the hard contact is way down. It's been 35% or so every year since 2012, and it's down to 22% so far this year. He's hitting 54% ground balls, a stark contrast from his previous years. So I don't know what the hell is going on. He's making way more contact, I guess, whatever that's worth. But I think this will even out. And I think he'll be a lot better. I just think that there's some injuries in there that we haven't heard about so far. And moving forward, I think he'll be okay. So I would be willing to definitely throw out some low ball offers on him. So let's move on to somebody a little more positive, Corey Dickerson. He has been on fire lately, and so far this year, I think this is as of today's game, he's hitting 335, 382, 608 with 9 bombs so far. So Ron, what do you think of the C-Dick?
I'm just happy I get to say C-Dick on the podcast tonight. I mean, he's legit, but I don't quite know if he's 335 legit to keep that up. But when you look at what he's done so far, he's kind of hovered around that spot for most of the year. And when you look at the lineup around him, I think that's kind of it speaks to a little bit more of what he's able to do at the plate, because as we know, the Rays aren't quite known for being an explosive offensive team. The thing I like about him, you know, as far as fantasy, especially when you look at him in a DFS standpoint, he hits at the top of the lineup when he's in there. And I think that helps you out as well, because you know he's going to get a solid 4 at bats for you. And the nine homers is huge as far as what he's done there. Last 10 games, he's got a hit in 9 out of the 10. So I think he's legit. To me, it's hard to believe he's going to keep up, you know, that ridiculous slash line that you just alluded to. But I like him. You know, of course, I'm a Rays guy too. But he's far and away been the most productive guy in that Rays lineup, even more so than Evan Longoria to this point.
Ugh, Longo's killing me in the BGFS Dynasty Classic. My God. Pick it up, Longo. what do you think, Van?
I completely agree. I mean, he's still not walking a whole lot, and the BABIP's at 391, so there's definitely some regression as far as batting average and OBP, but there's no reason he can't hit home runs because he does have power. I think maybe like a 270, 310, 470 line the rest of the way is a lot more likely than anything over 300 for the average, but that's still plenty of value here. I think got him in your draft or picked up or whatever, you're reaping the rewards and you're not going to move him. But I'm also not going to buy him simply because I think the cost is going to be absurd. I think he performs. I just don't think it's going to be worth it to spend to get that performance at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I do see some regression coming from him. It is nice to see him hitting for the power and being healthy, at least for the time being. He definitely can park a few balls in the seats. But, the batting average, moving forward, I would expect it to go down quite a bit. I mean, a 391 BABIP right now, and hitting the ball harder than he was last year, so that's good. 35% hard contact rate, that's back up in his Coors Field days. But one thing that he's always struggled with is same-sided pitching, the lefties. And right now he's hitting 370 against them over 50 plate appearances so far. So that on the surface is very encouraging because he, you know, that batting average could climb on the whole if he starts hitting lefties a lot better. However, if you dig into the quality of contact, he's got a 56% ground ball rate and just a 25% hard contact rate against lefties so far. So that to me says that he's been pretty fortunate against lefties so far. A lot of those balls are dropping in that maybe shouldn't. So I would definitely project some serious regression as far as the batting average moving forward. But as long as he's healthy, he should keep hitting bombs and be worthwhile against lefties or against righties. Sorry. So I agree. Like I wouldn't be necessarily buying him, but if you got him, I would try to sell high, I guess, to be perfectly honest. But if you're stuck with him, I wouldn't cry. Speaking of not grinding, if you have somebody, Zach Greinke has been pitching like the aces of old as we move into a trio of Zachs, actually. Three Zachs in a row. Zach Greinke, Zach Godley, Zach Eflin. So we're going to start off with the former ace, Greinke. 58 in the third inning so far. He's 5-2 with a 3.09 ERA. So, Van, we alluded to Greinke a little bit earlier, thinking he might be a Cub soon. So that aside, what do you think of Zach Greinke's performance for the rest of the season? Is he legit?
Well, I think he's legit, and I'm excited because this is a guy that I kind of hyped in the offseason. Some lists were having him, I don't know, as the 20th overall starting pitcher or something like that. And I understand he had a bad year last year, but this is a guy that doesn't necessarily rely on velocity. He's smart, and he knows how to pitch. So I knew that if he could get a little bit back, he could be really good, and he's doing exactly what I said he would. He's not going to be an ace anymore. He's not going to put that 1 or 2.12 ERA he put up with the Dodgers a few years ago again, but he's going to be really good. He's sitting at 309 with a 334 FIP. So, I mean, that's exactly what I thought he would do. I think this is very sustainable. Maybe the strikeouts are the tick high because I think his K per nine is over 10, but he still knows how to strike people out. And I'm all on board. I like him. And to be honest, if he gets traded to the Cubs, the first thing I always think with a pitcher is that, that sucks. They're going to a tough park to pitch in, but he's already in a tough park to pitch in. So I'm fine with that if he moves to the Cubs or moves anywhere for that matter. I think he's a good pitcher and he'll provide you value.
Yeah, it's the only way that you're going to downgrade as far as park goes from, you know, from Chase Field is Coors. So,
yeah.
All right, Ron, what do you say?
He's legit. He's your solid number two. I think Van hit it right on the head when you have to put in perspective what you're going to get out of these guys, and when you look at what he's done over his career, he really only has two seasons that are kind of abnormalities as far as the numbers he's posted. 2010 and 2016, he had ERAs above 4. Other than that, I mean, he's been as consistent as they come for as long as he's done it. So, and kind of like you alluded to, you know, Nate, he's pitching in a park where I'm going to kind of touch on this with Godley in the next one. where Chase is actually ranked above Coors right now, just a tick as far as park factor. Mm. And so he already pitches in a place that, you know, he's not supposed to succeed in, and he's pitching well. So I didn't get him anywhere in the preseason. I had a couple of leagues I was trying to target him in, and the bidding kind of got out of hand for him in the one. But other than that, you know, I'm all about him. I think he's not showing really any signs of a whole lot of regression, and I think he's putting up just not spectacular numbers, but just numbers that you know you're going to get a solid start every 5 days.
Yeah, I only got myself one share of Greinke, and that was in a dynasty league where I already owned him from last year, and I was cursing his name because he sucked. But yeah, so I'm very glad that he's been good this year, and that's the reason I'm in fourth so far in the prestigious dynasty baseball league. Swinging strike, you know, you guys talked about the strikeout rate being up. Very encouraging. He's increased his slider percentage by 6%, and that's led to a 3% jump in his swinging strike rate. So I think that's going to continue to help his, you know, a K per inning. I don't see that going under, you know, K per inning moving forward. One thing, I guess, in particular that does give me pause is a 38% hard contact allowed so far. So when he is getting hit, he's getting hit really hard. But everything else is, you know, he's getting so many swings and misses, and his control has been really impeccable so far. So he might be giving up a few more home runs than you would like. Hopefully, if they do ever put in that humidor, then that'll help him out even more. So yeah, I'm definitely aboard the Greinke train moving forward.
Real quick, Greinke story. This is a great one. A good friend of mine went through the journalism program at Missouri State University, and he actually got an interview with Zach Greinke way back when he was a Royal, before the Cy Young, and before he missed all that time because he had all the anxiety issues. This was vintage crazy Greinke. And if you go back and listen to this interview, it's creepy. Like, he's reciting poetry throughout the whole thing. He's just cryptically answering questions. It was just the most terrifying thing I've ever heard. And my friend was like scarred for life after having interviewed with Zach Greinke. It was amazing.
He's crazy, man. Like, even now, I mean, you said vintage crazy is great. Like, even now, it's, you hear so many stories, like, you know, Saris, because he's always, you know, around that ball club. He's down in Oakland and San Diego and all those guys quite a bit because he's in that area with the Giants. And, man, he's like, he loves talking to Greinke because he's so cerebral, but apparently he's just a really tough guy to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and there was that when Carlos Quentin hurt his shoulder or whatever because he charged him. I was afraid for Carlos Quentin. I thought he might have a knife or something.
I would know. Well, yeah.
To me, that story matches what his eyes look like. When you just look at, even in pictures, yeah. I thought crazy. Maybe that was just, you know, you refer to his game face, and I thought that was maybe his game face on the mound. No, that's just his everyday life face. You know, and that story to me matches the look in his eyes perfectly.
When he retires from baseball, he's going to get just like a cabin somewhere and grow a big beard and like live off the land and just be this terrifying Unabomber like guy. I'm not saying he's going to bomb a school, but I'm saying if anyone were to bomb a school, it's likely Zach Greinke.
He can mail out a couple of random packages to a few people across the country, you know.
He looks like a serial killer. I mean, come on, those eyes. Like, yeah. Sorry, Zach.
Please don't hurt us.
Please, God, don't hurt us. And speaking of God, Zach Godley and Zach's, oh my God, transition city over here. Zach Godley has been pitching rather godly so far. 18 2/3 innings pitched, 1-0 with a 1.93 ERA. And Ron, we're going to kick it over to you first. What do you think of Zach Godley? Is this legit?
We talked when we talked about Greinke, which, by the way, I want him to rewind and hear that we all said he's legit. We like him a lot.
So yeah.
I want to throw that out there. I'm kind of floored at what Zach Godley has done at Chase Field, because in the starts that he's made, they have all been at Chase Field. And teams are hitting .148 against him. You touched on the 1.93 ERA. He's got a whip under one. He's a career 4.85 ERA guy. So I it's hard for me to believe that this is going to continue. But, I mean, if he's doing it at that park, I got to give a slight tick to the legit side just for right now. I mean, if he's out there, grab him, ride the hot hand, and hope it continues. Because, you know, he's got a good offense behind him. You know they're going to hit. But it's tough to think that he's going to be able to do this the whole season. I mean, I don't know of anybody that's going to be able to put up these kind of numbers. These aren't even Kershaw type numbers.
And speaking of Zach's, by the way, Zach Cozart just hit a home run. And I got to say, I absolutely hate people named Zach as a writer because I never know which way, if it's Z-A-C-K or C-H. Like, God, there should just be one universal rule. You can only go one way or the other. I have to look it up on every single one of these guys. I can never remember. It drives me nuts. Grinky, also a last name that I'll never be able to spell right. E-I-R-I-E. I never know. But anyway, Godley, Van.
I mean, look, it's only three starts. That's the pause for me. They've been three great starts, but I think the numbers tell kind of a tale here. He's walking a little over four per nine. The only reason he's not really giving up runs is because he's allowed like a 143 average against. He's a ground ball guy. He's at 73% this year on ground ball percentage, and I don't like ground ball guys because he also doesn't really strike that many out. He strikes out some, but I don't believe he's even an 8K per 9 guy. So I'm off. I don't really think I'll be even thinking about Zach Godley for the rest of the season or career likely. So I don't know. I'm just not that interested in it. And I think if you have him, it's one of those ride the wave, but then bail as soon as something happens. Kind of like a Chase Headley type thing.
Oof. God, Chase Headley. What a guy. Good start to the season, though. But yeah, no, I'm definitely higher on the Godley, particularly than you, Van. I mean, obviously, the walks per nine are very ugly. Whenever you have a walks per nine over four, there's only so much you can do with that. And he's never had a very good first pitch strike rate, so that's something that he needs to work on if he's ever going to be really good, like more than a serviceable mid-rotation guy. But I think, obviously, sub-2 ERA, yeah, you're not going to get that. I'd say he's probably more of a mid-threes guy, but I do like the strikeouts. If you look at his strikeout rate so far this year, he's switched up his pitch mix a little bit. 15% swing strike rate so far. Obviously, still very small sample, just 18 innings. So there is that, but he's throwing his fastball more than last year. He's dropped the cutter, well, not entirely, but he's dropped the usage quite a bit. He's throwing that curveball like crazy, and his changeup. His changeup actually is just up 2%, but I think he should start throwing that pitch a lot more, because when I shot over to Brooks Baseball, I was looking at his changeup right now. He's thrown it 37 times so far. Guess what his ground ball rate on that changeup is?
Let's hear it.
100%!
Oh, wow.
With a zero batting average against. So you might want to start throwing that pitch a little bit more. I mean, maybe he struggles commanding it. Well, I don't really know, but I mean, that so far has been an electric pitch for him. And the curveball, obviously, I mean, what, like you said, it was 73% ground ball rate, my God. And he was upper 60s in the minors so far this year. And he is a sinker baller, so that's, you know, there you go. And I actually like a sinker ball or ground ball pitcher in, you know, in Chase Field, and you got to go to Colorado and so on and so forth. I think that's gonna help him keep the ball in the yard, which was a problem for him in 2016. But I like him. If he can not destroy your whip, I think that he continue to limit the hits and strike out a fair number of guys. So I would be looking at him as a back end option in, you know, in deeper mixed leagues. I'd say even 12-team mixed leagues, I would at least be looking at him as a streamer. Probably not 10-team leagues yet, just because, like I said, because of the whip. But I'm definitely interested. Godley has my eye. And our third, Zach, the trifecta, Zach Eflin. Let's see. We're going to start with you, Van, on this one. 32 innings pitched so far. Has yet to register a decision, but has a 2.81 ERA. What do you think of him?
We'll go ahead and finish up the Zach cubed part of this podcast here. You know, I literally wrote on my sheet, see above, with Zach Godley, and it's not the same deal, but it's kind of a similar deal, although he's kind of extreme in a couple of ways. Strikeouts, he doesn't do it. So I really don't care for him from that regard. He's got a 4.78 K per nine rate this year. Career-wise, he's at 4.53. Now, obviously, it's going to be higher than that because no one is that low, with the exception of like Jared Weaver. But I'm not sold on it. His FIPs at 4.34, his current ERA is 2.81. So he's really outperforming that metric. He's left 82.2% of his runners on base. So that's generally a little higher than you see. So I think that's going to come down. So I'm not really that interested. I'm just less interested in Eflin than I am Godley. If I'm going to take one of them, it's going to be Godley, because cleanliness is next to godliness.
And godliness is next to Van Linus.
Ooh, there you go.
all over that one. What do you think of the Eflin run?
I have to say this. I can't pass it up. I say no effing way. am I going to go there? When we compare him to Godley, he's trending the opposite way. And he's on the mound tonight, and he's not looking too impressive tonight as well. Two innings, six hits, 200 runs already. The ERAs went up to 3.18, which still isn't terrible. But when you look at his last couple of starts, he's allowed nine hits in each of the last two, 300 runs, which isn't going to kill you. But and like Van said, he doesn't strike anybody out. He's a career 4.63 ERA guy. It seems like he's allowing a lot of guys to get on base, you know, like with the nine hits. It seems like he's being able to pitch out of jams. I don't look at that as happening much longer. So I'm definitely going to say quit. I'm definitely not on the Zach Eflin bandwagon.
You know, I thought that we had an episode title when Van said Zach cubed, but then you dropped a no Eflin way.
And an even better one, yeah.
I just crossed that right out. So
that ship, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, no, I don't have much to add. I'm quitting the Eflin for sure. Like you guys said, just a lot of regression coming. We might be watching it, like you said. I mean, he's on the mound right now, so we might be watching the regression as we speak. And yeah, when you're striking out fewer than five guys per nine, he's not going to help you out in any league. It reminds me of Doug Fister a few years ago, like, or even Adam Wainwright. I got too many Zachs on the mind. Good Lord, like who are you helping if you're striking out five guys per nine? Anyway. Moving on from the Eflin to Eduardo Rodriguez, a guy who I definitely love. And, oh, Lord, who did we start off with last time? I forget.
It's Ron's turn.
Ron, there you go. Start us off with the E-Rod.
I'm a fan of E-Rod. I was kind of hoping he would win the rotation spot out of spring training, but he didn't. I think he was injured. Was he injured in spring training? Is that why he didn't get?
Yes.
Okay, so you look at his seven starts, five of them have been quality starts. 3.05 ERA, 47 Ks and 41 in the third innings. The only thing I don't like about him, and I think this will kind of take care of itself with experience, is he's not gone deeper than six innings in any start, but he's averaging 102.5 pitches per start. I would definitely like to see that go down because that means he's laboring a little bit. But overall, his overall numbers look good, and I like the strikeout potential there. Of all the guys we've talked about, he's by far, I think, the guy with the biggest strikeout potential as far as for your team, but I definitely like him. I just want to see him pitch a few more than six innings in his starts. Or if he's going to get to that six innings, I don't want to see him taking 102 pitches to get there.
Yeah. Van, what do you think of the E-Rod? Which I hate.
I agree.
I hate that nickname, by the way, E-Rod. Like, can you think of anything less original?
We just need to stop it with the first three letters of the last name nicknames. Just stop it. Just stop. Don't do that anymore.
We should come up with. He needs a nickname from the NASCAR.
A new way to do that. Okay, I may have to get on that and see if I can think of something. But I do like him, and I think you put him on here just because you wanted to brag about yourself because you were really high on the beginning of the season. I was high, but I was very tempered expectations, which I still think we should have. But I think what I said at the preseason for his. The best you could expect for is likely what you're going to get, which would be a 3 to 3.5 ERA, decent strikeout numbers, and a, you know, 170 innings or something like that, 160 innings. And he's been good. So I think really the takeaway for me is next year, I'm probably really heavily going to be targeting him. This year, I still like him, but I think next year is going to be the full breakout if he continues at this pace.
Yeah, I agree that I think this is definitely a very nice step forward next year. Maybe even over the second half this year, we'll see some more improvement. I've managed to catch two of his starts now this year, and I actually hadn't realized even over the course of last season how much he's been adjusting his arm slot. Like, he's practically a side armor at this point.
Yeah,
reminiscent of a medicine Bumgarner, and that's done him a world of good. I mean, he's, like they were saying on the broadcast, he's been able to get a little bit more horizontal movement on his pitches with that release point that has dropped, and he has been using his changeup more, which is his best off-speed pitch, and that's been, I mean, it's up 4%, so not huge, about 5%, but you're seeing more swings and misses as a result of that, and I think that's what he needs to do, and that's obviously a very good way to, combat opposite-handed hitters, and he's been using it very well. And the one thing, like you said, Ron, you know, his pitch counts go up too early, he still needs to improve the control and the command. And when he does that, if he does that, he could definitely be, he could be a borderline number one. He, you know, maybe a number two this year, but he definitely has some regression looming. You know, 268 BABIP so far has been pretty good. So even, but even if you look at his FIP, 339 FIP, not too bad. It sucks pitching in the AL East, but you know, I think that as long as Rodriguez can stay healthy, and that is always a concern with him, I think you can get number three numbers from him the rest of the way. We are going to be reporting about the bullpen, which, of course, like I said at the top of the show, you can find on BigEyeFantasySports.com. Colby Conway puts that out every week. We're going to touch on some of the hot topic guys. Does that make sense? I'm a good host.
Well, I mean, it just depends if you really want to go buy an ironic T-shirt and maybe like a choker. Then it's considered hot topic.
Oh, my God.
Genko jeans, maybe.
Good stuff. So you know who wears Genko jeans is that Edwin Diaz, who has been demoted at least temporarily in Seattle, perhaps because he did not look cool wearing those jeans while allowing so many walks on the mound. So Van, let's start with you. Who is your ticket to close in the interim while Diaz is demoted? And do you think that he gets the job back when they figure out what's wrong with him?
Well, he's going to have to drop the pants because that makes it really hard to use your lower half when you've got 40-pound pants on.
I think it adds to the deception and the delivery.
It could. You could hide the ball a little better because it's lost in a sea of blue.
And they won't even know you're kicking. They won't even know you're kicking your leg either. You can't even see it.
Right. Okay, I kind of have to brag a little on this because I think we talked about this, Nate, at the beginning of the season. People were considering Diaz to be the next Kinley Jansen.
Yeah,
he was going to come in.
You were as low on
Diaz
as anybody.
Crazy. Yeah, well, and I'm not necessarily – okay, it gets exacerbated when people are so crazy high on somebody. I go the opposite way. I go, that's absurd, so I'm going to say no. So that's kind of what happened there. So I'm thrilled that he kind of got demoted here. I thought he was going to be really good, and I ranked him in the preseason fairly high in my – well, maybe not high, but maybe 8 to 12 in my closer list just because he has good stuff. But this is the danger of – taking those high picks with closers or people like this, because it could just as easily happen where they get demoted because they struggle for a few weeks. I think career wise, he'll be fine. And I think he's probably going to be up later this year to close because there's just nothing on this team right now. They're saying it's a closer by committee. And the three guys that they mentioned were Steve Cishek, who already blew a save, Nick Vincent and Tony Zitch. So none of those guys really inspire confidence. Vincent's more of a limit the damage guy, but he doesn't have a ton of velocity. He doesn't strike a lot out. I'm going to go with Zitch. I think he gets the dub just because he has that closer profile. Strikes a lot of guys out. Throws pretty hard. So I'm going to lean his way. But I think ultimately at the end of the year, we might still see Diaz back with the closer job.
All right. What's your take on the situation out there in Seattle, Ron?
Before I talk about that, during our extended break, I was trying to rack my brain for an Eduardo Rodriguez nickname.
Oh, good.
So I want to throw out what I came up with. It was, you know, like I said, it's kind of quick, but I want to call him Reduardo Soxriguez.
Reduardo Soxriguez. It's great as long as he stays a Red Sox. No, actually, I like it even better if he moves to a different team.
You know. So that, you know, like I said, during the break, that's what I was able to do. So I didn't want to forget that. So anyway, sure. When I look at the guys that are the candidates to replace Diaz, it's just kind of a blah group. I mean, I don't see anything that really stands out with any of them. I mean, Cishek is the guy that's got the most experience. And I looked at, you know, he's got 120 career saves, but he's also very shaky getting those 120 career saves. So Tony Zisch got the save the other night. I mean, I guess since he's got one under his belt already, he kind of would be the favorite. But when you look at the stats the guys have, you know, with Cishek and Vincent and Repchinski's there as well and Zitch, I mean, their numbers aren't bad. They just, to me, none of them really have that closer stuff, that closer makeup that you look for. So I guess I would go with Zitch as well. But I mean, I don't think you rule Cishek out just because he's had experience in the role. But it seems like every time he gets the role, he's decent for a while, and then all of a sudden it's you know, you're on pins and needles seeing if he's going to save a game, and he gets pulled as well. But I agree with you. I think Diaz has the stuff, and I think he'll be up back in the closer role way before the end of the season.
Yeah, I am definitely hanging on to Diaz. It's apparently they've identified a mechanical flaw. Like, he walked four guys in a row. Something is just amiss in his mechanics, and they think that he'll be back in that role as soon as they get that ironed out. So it's only a matter of time as far as I'm concerned. So any of these guys, like we've sort of established, minimal interest in any of them. Steve Cishek already blew a save, like you said. And it's hard to put too much on him. He's pitched very sparingly so far this year. And certainly his debut was inauspicious, as they say, or at least his last one. I guess he's appeared in two games. But yeah, and then Zeitz would be my other guy. I picked him up. I spent a few bucks on him in a league. But that was before I actually even looked at his numbers. I'm just like, oh, closer. I'll put in a claim on him. And looking at his numbers, gross. Not a lot of strikeouts and way too many walks. So yeah, very, very minimal interest in any of those guys. I think just hang on to Diaz until he's back. But I guess it's this that time of the week where we check in on the Washington bullpen. And now we have John Kelly and Cody Glover both back on the disabled list. Ben, we started with you on the last one. So Ron, kick us off here. What's the latest in Washington? Who's your guy?
I mean, me personally, it's Cody Glover because I invested in him most heavily of all of them, but I'm just at a point where I'm kind of tired of worrying about the Washington bullpen, and I'm not too convinced that they're not going to go out and get somebody at some point, especially, you know, if they think they have a real shot at doing something in the postseason, which it looks like early on they do. There's been rumblings of them kicking the tires on Kelvin Herrera, so there could be somebody else brought in. But as far as stuff, I like Glover's stuff a little bit better. His fastball kind of sits in the mid-90s. Slider sits in the low 90s, which is pretty impressive. Kelly has looked okay, but I just think as far as pure closer stuff, I think Glover's the guy that I'm going to just kind of settle on. And if he gets the job, it's a bonus for me. If not, you know, like I said, I'm just kind of tired of trying to estimate who's going to get it and who's going to be the odd man out.
What do you think, Ben?
I agree. I think if this were any of, say, 25 other managers in the game, Glover would be the guy hands down. But because it's Dusty Baker, Kelly may have an outside shot. Glover's the better pitcher, and I think if he stays healthy, he gets the job and runs with it. But I did put down on my list who I think the closers are going to be is just TBD, to be determined, because I still think, like you, Ron, hinted at, they're going to go outside of the organization eventually. But for now, if I'm going to bet on one of these guys, I'm going to go with Glover all the way.
Yeah, I've been a Kelly guy all along, so I'm not going to waver at this point. He's given up way too many home runs. There's no doubt about that. But his walks are really inflated so far this year, despite the fact he's got a 74% first pitch strike rate. And his swing strikes are fine. Like everything in his arsenal looks fine so far. So it just kind of sucks that he's got an ERA over 7, especially for the several teams that I have him on. But yeah, whichever one you have, I mean, just stick with it. God only knows. Like you said, I think it's only a matter of time until they trade for somebody else. I mean, they've got to pick somebody up to solidify the back end of that bullpen because it does look like they're going to be making a World Series push so far this year. So I'm still sticking with Kelly personally. But let's see. Let's move over. I guess these next two, I'm just going to mention them, and if either of you guys have anything to interject, go ahead and do that. But otherwise, I think we can just pretty much skim over them because they seem pretty clear-cut. In the Bronx, Aroldis Chapman is on the disabled list. Betances will close while he's out. Everybody owned Betances in pretty much every league anyway, so there's really no actionable move here aside from crying if you have Aroldis Chapman, but he should be okay after a little bit of rest. And then since last week, Yuris Familia, he's going to be out in at least a couple months. Could be out the rest of the season. He had a blood clot in his armpit. So Addison Reed has been closing out games again. And I guess who would you guys rather have for the rest of the season, Dela Betances or Addison Reed?
I'd rather have Reed because I think he has the job all year because I don't think Familia comes back from this. Chapman, I think, comes back, so Betances won't have the job, though Betances is a better pitcher. I think, though, if he succeeds, Betances, in this interim with this closer's job, it's really going to take away any argument the Yankees have against him from that whole stupid thing where, like, well, he can't close, so he shouldn't get paid at all. So I think that's good for him to hopefully get some saves to just kind of shove it in their face. But I like them both. I think if you have these guys, you're going to be great when you've got them, when they're both closers.
Yeah, it was amazing how quickly that flaming douchebag Randy Levine turned around and said, "Oh, now he's ready to close. He's, I expect nothing but the best from him." Good God, did that drive me up a freaking wall. So much stuff that the Yankees have done recently. So it's terrible. But did you agree with that, Ron?
Yeah, I think Reed's going to get you more saves because I don't think – there's no way Familia comes – I mean, it's possible, but I don't think that something that serious he comes back from. Both solid guys, but you're going to obviously get more saves out of Reed. And you know, we were talking about Washington going outside and looking for a guy, you know, to close. I mean, who knows? They could maybe see Betances in this role and kick the tires on him, and maybe they could bring him in. Who knows?
Interesting. All right, well, let's move over to Milwaukee, where Neftali Feliz has been demoted from the closer's role after predictably giving up a buttload of home runs, and Corey Knable is going to close, and I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back on this one because Knable, I believe, was my number one handcuff coming into the season. So it took about three more weeks than I expected, but Knable is closing now. So what do you guys think between him and Reed the rest of the season? Who would you prefer?
I'll take Reed. I like Evil Knable, but he walks a little more than Reed does. And Reed has clearly changed something because he's elite right now. So I'll go Knable, or I'm sorry, Reed. In addition to that, because Knable is in Milwaukee, which is a crazy hitter's park, so he's going to give up more home runs just by default.
Ron?
Yeah, pretty much same for me. I like Knable a little bit, though, because he was mentioned in the conversation before Feliz won the job, so I think it was something that the organization was kind of looking at anyway. And when you look at his numbers, they're pretty decent. He's got a, you know, his ERA is actually lower than his WHIP, amazingly enough. I thought that was kind of an interesting stat. But yeah, Reed, like I said, I think unless he really implodes, he's going to be the guy I think that's got the more stable position the rest of the year over the other two we mentioned.
Yeah, definitely. It's tough to get two on board all the way with many guys that Knable has been walking so far. So hopefully he can work on that a little bit. But when you're striking out that many guys, there's only so much damage that is going to be done against you. So let's shift into some prospects. We talked about some call-ups earlier. These are some guys that might potentially be on the brink of a call-up. And so I'm going to throw this over to you, Ron. Guy number one, Dominic Smith with the Mets. What do you think about him?
I think it's only a matter of time before – well, I hope it's only a matter of time before the Mets realize that they need to bring him up because it's pretty evident they're going nowhere quickly. There's a lot of things going wrong with their season, the Matt Harvey drama, Thor being out. You know, they're not that good on offense. You know, Lucas Duda just came back. So that kind of hurts Smith's chances a little bit. But overall, I think he's got a lot to offer. He's only 21, so it could stand to reason that they're not in a hurry to bring him up. But what the hard thing to believe about him being 21 is this is already his fifth season as a pro, all in the minors. And he's hit at every level. I think when you look at every level he's been at, the lowest he's ever hit is 271. He's off to a blazing start this year. It's kind of scary to think that him and Ahmed Rosario, you know, we talked about him a few weeks ago, wrote about him, the starts that they're off to, they're in the same lineup at AAA. They both got to be brought up at some point. It's hard to ignore these guys. This season, Smith has shown in the past that he can get the bat on the ball, but the power hasn't been there yet, and I think the power is going to develop a little bit more. He hit 14 homers last year, which isn't a ton, but considering he'd never hit double digits before in a minor league season, that's pretty big. He's already got 5 this year, 24 RBIs. He's got a 329, 386, 507 line. Sees the ball real well. Good defender at first base. Good athlete. I think of when I look at Dominic Smith, I think of a more athletic, better, more, I guess I should say, more powerful James Loney. And I know from a fantasy standpoint, you're not salivating when you hear the name James Loney. I think he's more of a solid pro baseball player than he is a fantasy baseball player. And I think Dominic Smith's upside is much beyond that, but that was kind of the best comparison I come up with right now. But like I said, Lucas Duda coming back kind of hurt him a little bit. TJ Rivera was in there at first and did a decent job there, but at some point they're going to have to get Rosario and they're going to have to get Smith up for a couple of reasons. Either they're going to make a push and think they're in it and they need that extra little boost, or they're going to be so far out of it that it's not going to help them or hurt them if they bring them up and kind of see what they have with them. So I think it's a matter of time before both of those guys come up, because there's not a ton standing in their way. You know, even though Lucas Duda is up and he's played okay the last couple of seasons, he's not really a guy that you look at as a franchise first baseman. So if I'm looking at Dominic Smith, if I got room to stash him, you know, you're kind of alluding earlier to the roster size and the DL spots and all that. If you have a place to put him, I think it's a solid add in a deeper league, but he definitely needs to be on your watch list and on your radar in most leagues.
Yeah, I would say as a dynasty guy, you definitely have to own him. But yeah, as far as redraft leagues, it's tough to stash him, like you said, just because of the lack of power. You know, curbs his upside certainly quite a bit, but really it might be only a matter of time before Lucas Duda is back on the DL, because that's what he does best. Number one, hit the DL. Number two, hit dingers. That's pretty much how it goes for him. But number two, this other guy, this caught me by surprise. There's not a whole lot of minor leaguers that are worth talking about generally that I've never heard of before, but this one I had never heard of before you mentioned this guy, Jonathan Zaitzik.
Zaitzik. It's a fun name.
It is. It sounds very German.
Yeah.
When I looked at the pitchers I had on the slate to discuss this week, I was just kind of looking over some stats, and this guy's numbers jump off the page, and it's very different from what he's done in the past. I mean, he's been a solid pitcher in the past, but nothing like what he's doing in AAA this year. So far this year, he's got an ERA under one, he's got a microscopic WHIP, 26-4 strikeout to walk ratio. He's a left-hander, 26 years old, so he's a little bit more mature on the prospect list. But the reason that a lot of people haven't heard about him is he's not even listed in the Royals' top 30 prospects. So he's definitely a guy that's kind of come out of left field as far as what he's doing. Not an overpowering guy, not a power pitcher, but he's able to get outs. He's able to keep the ball in the park. He doesn't allow a lot of homers, but he's definitely improved since he took the mound in 2017 as opposed to 2016 when you compare the two. When you look at the rotation in Kansas City, you look at guys like Nate Carnes, you look at guys like Jason Hamill. Ian Kennedy's already had a stint on the DL. I think he might actually be coming back this weekend, if I remember correctly. So it might be a little bit longer before you see him, but and kind of like we talked with guys like Zach Godley as well earlier, I don't see that he's going to keep these microscopic numbers going, but if they're in a point where Carnes, Hamill are not getting it done, they've got to give him a shot. Even if they bring him up in a relief role and then maybe stretch him out to get him to start. But it was just when you look at what he's doing, I mean, and he's pitched about 30 innings, so he's starting to get a decent size sample to where they're going to have to, he's going to be knocking loudly on the door. They're going to have to answer the door and at least see what they have with him or move on. And so he's definitely not as close as Smith. And I don't think he can make as big of a fantasy impact as Smith can or will. But he's a guy just kind of, you know, he's got one of those names that's kind of hard to forget. So, you know, once you get it kind of stuck in your brain, you know, he's going to be there for a while. So he's worth knowing who he is and just kind of monitoring, you know, the situation there, especially if Kennedy goes out or they have another guy go out on the DL. But, you know, he's a guy, like I said, I always tend to look at these prospects that are a little more mature, because, you know, you look at Dominic Brown, who's 21, as opposed to, you know, a guy that's 26, they say that, you know, a lot of these players hit their prime around 27, 28. So he's kind of right on that cusp. So it's hard to say how he's going to develop, but I think he's a guy that you definitely need to, you know, put in the back of your brain and just kind of, if you hear that name, oh yeah, I'm going to check him out and see if I can use him anywhere. But he's definitely, at this point, I wouldn't look at him in anything beyond AL only or a really deep league of any type.
Yeah, and by the way, it's spelled D-Z-I-E-D-Z-I-C. So, I mean, just a really fun name just to look at even. So some deeper guys that I'm going to throw out there, probably owned in most leagues. I believe they're top 100 prospects on most lists coming into the year. So maybe only, you know, 10, 12 team dynasty leagues would these guys ever be on the wire, but definitely guys to target and trade if you're perhaps restocking your farm system. The first guy I'm going to mention is Luis Gohara, who was traded to the Braves last year. It's too bad Miller isn't on the show right now, so he could do backflips about Luis Gohara. But Gohara is a guy who I traded for, I believe, in the offseason, actually, as a starting pitching prospect with the Braves. He's a lefty, mid to upper 90s velocity from the left side. So obviously that alone is going to catch your eye. Slider is at least average, but he can command it. And that's the best part of his profile right now, is the fastball slider and the fact that he actually has some solid command. The changeup, he reports were at the AFL, he didn't even throw it. And so apparently that needs a lot of work. And he just actually got promoted to Double A, and unfortunately he was injured in his very first start at Double A. He threw only two innings, but he's only 20 years old, so just the fact that he moved to Double A is exciting. We'll see how bad that injury is, but not a guy that you're going to see next year, maybe the following year, maybe the year after that. Kind of depends on how it goes. Kind of depends on how that changeup goes, to be perfectly honest. If he doesn't have that third pitch, you're looking at a power reliever. So I think as a floor with Gohara, you're looking at a elite closer, pumping upper 90s from the left side. Maybe in a relief role, he could even hit triple digits. But hopefully, he's a big old dude, so he's definitely got a starting frame. So I think they're going to try and start him as much as they can. And then the other guy I wanted to mention is Juan Soto, who's an outfielder that is really climbing the rankings very quickly. He's an outfielder with the Nationals. And, Soto, I believe he got a promotion, high A so far this year. Walking more than striking out, with a 360, 427, 523 slash line so far. He's actually been injured, too. He's on the DL with an ankle injury. But, that doesn't really matter when you're 18 years old. But this guy, he's got an elite ceiling. Gonna have a really nice hit tool, really nice power. Not a ton of speed, but definitely a guy that he's been one of the fast risers. So if he's out there, you need to go get him. I was just thinking we might have mentioned him on a dynasty podcast in the off season. I guess I can't remember, but he's definitely got to look at for your dynasty leagues. Pick him up if he's out there. So, gentlemen, we're just about to wrap up the show, and our last segment that we're going to do, as always, is some weekend streaming. And Van, we'll start off with you. Give us perhaps a small handful of your favorite options to stream this weekend.
I have a couple of guys for you. First off, Trevor Williams of the Pirates. Had a pretty solid season in the minors last year. Nothing spectacular, but solid. He's going to get a start against a Phillies team that's in the bottom third of the majors and runs scored against right-handers. So this is a guy that's he's not going to give you a complete game shutout with 15 strikeouts, but if you're looking for a decent streamer that no one owns, this is one of them. I think he's going to have a decent, solid start. And then this one's for you, Nate. The Mets are hitting .229 on this season against left-handed pitchers, and Alex Meyer of the Angels is going to get a start against them this weekend. It's an interleague start. His last start, he put up 6 1/3 and gave up one run, struck out a handful. He's striking out, 11 or 12 per nine. The walks, that's always the thing with him. So if he can limit the walks, he could put up a pretty good start, and he's the opposite. If he put up a complete game shutout with 15 strikeouts, I would go, that's insane. But it really isn't that insane because he does have the strikeout rate. So we'll see. I think that's a pretty good option to fling out there and see if you can strike gold.
Yes, Alex Meyer, oh boy. Sadly, I need him in my 24-team score sheet league because I lost Kluber. Also relying on Tyler Glass now, which is not going well, I've got to say. Very, very ugly there in Tanaka to boot. Oh, my God. Let's move on. Ron, what are you recommending for some streamers this weekend?
All right, I tried to throw one out for each day. So Friday I went with Erasmo Ramirez for Tampa. He's getting a spot start against the Yankees, and I being down here in South Florida, being a Rays fan, I watch a lot of their games, and surprisingly, Erasmo Ramirez is not that bad when he's on the mound, especially at the Trop. He's got 11-7 record there, 2.71 career ERA. He made four starts against the Yankees, 3.71 ERA, so I'd like to see that a little lower. The Yankees are hitting .278 against righties, but they've also struck out 245 times against them, 983 at bats. And to me, the most attractive part of Erasmo Ramirez is that he's only 4% owned in Yahoo leagues, which I thought was probably about four times too high as far as an ownership percentage. Saturday, I think I'm going with the guy that is opposing Alex Meyer, and that's Zach Wheeler. I think they're going against each other Saturday, maybe not. But he is pitching against the Angels regardless. Angels are, you know, and I was looking at this and I was wondering, you know, when we do NFL stuff, we talk about, you know, West Coast teams coming to the East Coast. And I wonder if there's anything to baseball teams doing that as well. So the Angels travel to the Mets. They're only in 236 against righties. They're only hitting 222 on the road. And Wheeler at home has only got a 198 batting average against him so far. So the only thing, like we alluded to earlier, you know, kind of the reason Van picked Alex Meyer is the Mets offense is not doing a whole lot right now. And then my third guy, and he's 26% owned, so his ownership percentage is a little high, but it's still right around that 25 to 30%. Last guy I threw out there for Sunday, a guy that we talked about already, so I'm not going to dive too deep into his stats. Zach Godley's only 25% owned in Yahoo, and he's only got a 223 batting average against overall, and he's pitching at San Diego, so... he's going from a park where he's not supposed to be a good pitcher to a pitcher's park. So knowing my luck, he'll probably implode in a pitcher's park, and I'll be wrong. But he's got that low ownership percentage that you could go out and grab him if you need a guy for Sunday.
Yes, I Godley headed my list as well, especially at San Diego. That is very nice. God, by the way, Zach Eflin, four innings, seven earned runs on 11 hits. So
there you go. So that's over.
Yep. So there's that. I also saw Trevor Cahill is hitting the DL. Good God. What a season. Anyway, so yeah, I only had two guys. They're both on Saturday. One was Godley. The other one, Adalberto Mejia, is coming back up to at least make a spot start for the Twins, and he's going to be in Kansas City against the lowly Royals, and so I would definitely roll the dice on that one. He had some tough starts earlier on, but I think he can be a lot better than that. Probably just a back-end guy, but as I've said, I believe for about 6 weeks straight on this, I'm willing to throw anybody out against the Royals. So good work today, boys. That's going to wrap us up. Ron, when do you get to make your debut with Fantastics?
I believe it's going to be later on this month, so you'll be able to check me out over there. And then, as always, I'll still be doing the weekly on-deck circle over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports.
Very good. And, Van, you got the usual going on these days?
Oh, the usual. I think I'm going to play a little bit of MLB The Show tonight. So if anybody out there wants to get creamed, you can find me on the PSN network at Sparky Burns. I will utterly destroy you. Not really. I'm actually not as good as I used to be at this game. But I'm going to do that. You can find my writings at ButuInc.com. We've got a new backup catcher coming out soon as Brian can find time to record. And he's actually going to be in town. He moved to Pittsburgh, so it'll be nice to get to see my co-host and put out some live garbage, because that means we'll drink during it.
That is always a plus. So yeah, I obviously you can check my work at Fantastics Insider Baseball. I'll be on SiriusXM on Sunday for a couple segments talking with those guys there. And of course, looking for my Fire and Ice article on Big Guy Fantasy Sports, which drops usually Friday or Saturday, depending on whether it's Bob or Nate who is putting it up. But yeah, I wanted, before we sign off real quick, like, Ron, I don't know, do you play The Show?
No, because it's to me, of all the video games I've played in my lifetime, it is probably the most frustrating game I have attempted to play. So I was big on it a few years back, but I haven't been into it for a few.
Okay. See, I like when I do the Diamond Dynasty, I spend most of my time designing the uniforms, which are slick as hell. Man,
what's your team name?
I am the North Dakota Rawhide.
Nice.
Yeah, it was the most like bonanza style name that I could possibly think of. So, yeah, I have a lot of fun with that. But man,
I am the Atlantic City Wizards, as most people could probably have guessed.
Are you a wizard of some sort? I guess I've been meaning to ask that question for several years now.
How did you not know this? Of course, I'm a wizard. I'm wearing my wizard hat here.
I thought you were a doctor, actually.
I wear many hats. Let's put it that way.
That's true. I believe
it's actually a wizard doctor hat. It's a combination. Has this weird, what's this silver circle thing you see in like doctor hats? What even is that thing?
I don't know.
You know what I'm talking about? Like Dr. Mario has one. I don't know what it is.
I don't know. if you're a doctor out there, please hit us up on Twitter. Let us know. We've got it. We've got to know. But all right, enough jibber jabber for 1 week. We're going to get out of here. Until next week, folks. May the fantasy gods shine upon you.